The views and opinions expressed on the following program are not necessarily those of the staff and management of KLAY or those who advertise their products or services on this station.
Educational call-in program about atheism, skeptical inquiry, and the separation of church and state. I'm Beth Lehman, and my co-hosts this week are Scott Leopold and Mike Gillis. How are you doing, you guys?
Great. Good to
doing
be here.
Good. Good week.
Great. As always, we're going to start this week with our countdown to backpedaling. It's 90 days until the backpedaling begins, and Mike, can you explain a little bit about what that's about?
Oh, 90 days. So we're into 3 months now. Countdown to backpedaling came about. There's this group called Family Radio based out of California, and it looks like it's encapsulating more than just family radio now, because there are literally thousands of billboards and bus ads decrying that Jesus is going to return and usher in the end times starting on May 21st. So what we've done, knowing that it's really not likely that this is the beginning of the end, that we're going to count down to the backpedaling, the tortured reasoning that these guys use when nothing happens. So we're counting down to May 22nd. 90 days remain, and I would really like to know, how are these guys going to react? Are they going to pull up stakes and pretend that nothing happened, take down their website, or are they going to make excuses?
And I have a theory that probably what will happen is they've already figured out their response, because they know that it's not going to – I mean, maybe they do earnestly believe that it is going to happen, but I can't imagine that a campaign with this much money and this much visibility, that they haven't already decided what their response will be if, in fact, Jesus doesn't return.
Yeah, the thing that boggles my mind is – I know we've had a picture of this up on our website on askanatheist.tv. There is a map where this is an international thing. This is not just the United States with billboards in, you know, the Bible Belt. This is billboards up in Russia and Malaysia and Egypt. I mean, all over the world. I mean, this is literally a multi-million dollar campaign.
Yeah, and it's not just billboards. They have newspaper ads that they're sending out, all kinds of advertisement.
Radio ads, too.
Yeah, exactly. All kinds of advertisements that they're putting out there. So it's serious business for these guys. And so we decided that we might address that and sort of see what happens the day after. And so for those of you who have been emailing saying, hey, I figured out the timeline and 90 days isn't quite right, it should be 89, we're not counting down to the day that Jesus is supposed to come. We're counting down to the day after.
The day after is when it gets really interesting, because we're pretty certain that we're not going to see Jesus come back.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I would say that I'd be willing to make a bet on that, and I'm not a betting woman.
Yeah, I would love to see these the guys who are running this site put some money down on this as well. I would really like to see them. I would say on May 21st, give your house away, give all of your money away, and basically give everything to the poor the way the Bible says you're supposed to. That's something that I find really funny, is that so many of these people who believe in this prosperity gospel, that God wants you to be rich, forgets that the Bible says on several occasions, not only are you supposed to give all of your property away and live an ascetic life like a monk, but that the odds of a rich man making it into heaven are better than it's actually worse than the camel making it through the eye of a needle.
Yeah, exactly. We actually already have a caller. We have Cornell on line 2 from Shoreline. Let's see what Cornell has to say. He wants to talk about Jehovah's Witnesses and hell. Cornell, how's it going?
I'm fine.
Good. What did you want to talk about today?
Well, the thing is, how different is it? I don't know how to phrase it exactly. Is it the same? I'm thinking it's the same.
Oh, what are we talking about? How different is what?
Well, the Jehovah's Witnesses look at some of the scriptures differently than the regular Christians do.
Well, that could be said about any Christian denomination, really.
I think that that's why there are different denominations. Are you specifically interested in what Jehovah's Witnesses believe?
Well, yeah, because, no, yeah, I am, because they seem to go by what they call it, they have the real cut. Everybody else kind of believes in the hell and heaven. They believe differently than that. And they allow for the scientists view on the length of the Earth, they agree with that. Their 6,000 years is not 6,000 years like most Christians believe in. But like I was thinking, but okay, they have that. They go by more of what the Bible actually says on the subject, or I can follow what they're saying. But all the other stuff that the Bible says, they kind of agree with all the other Christians. So I shouldn't let that trip me up in my atheism and my walk with, having evidence of things.
Yeah, I find that the interesting thing with the Bible is it really is the book of multiple choice. This is a choose-your-own-adventure book, and it's amazing the stuff that people cherry-pick. That fundamentalists cherry-pick just as much as liberals and moderates do in Christianity, Islam, any religion you name. Like, for instance, the more conservative Christians tend to throw out the fact that you're supposed to live an ascetic life, give all your property away to the poor. They don't tend to recognize that part. And the liberals and moderates tend to ignore the fact that several times in the Bible you're instructed to kill people for a series of non-crimes.
And I'm going to be honest, Cornell, personally, I don't know that much about Jehovah's Witnesses and exactly what they believe. I do know that whenever I'm a busser, I'm not a driver, whenever I'm waiting at a bus stop, chances are there is a good chance that when you're waiting at a bus stop in the greater Seattle area, there's going to be a watchtower nearby. It's one of the places that they sort of drop that literature off to hope to, I think, randomly net someone who's interested. And in one of the more recent issues of The Watchtower, I actually read a segment where they talked about intelligent design and how if you look at the wings of a dragonfly, you can see that Boeing engineers have modeled wing types after that dragonfly. And somehow that's supposed to prove that the world was created. So in terms of what they believe in science, I'm not sure. But if I'm going by the Watchtower that I've read, they're not necessarily pro-science. They might pick and choose science. But like you're saying, from people who pick and choose elements of their own biblical texts to follow, it doesn't surprise me that they would do the exact same thing with scientific information.
Yeah, they kind of do that. They only quote science sources that agree with the way they believe in the Bible.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's one of the most important parts of pointing out that there's a discrepancy.
But that's something I've seen from any Christian denomination that tries to find their evidence in science or nature that the Bible is somehow accurate. And almost always when you actually look at the passage that they're using, it never actually works in context. Like, I know that somebody was talking recently on the internet, a famous internet creationist, talking about how there's a passage in the Bible talking about how you need to wash your hands, and this is evidence of how surgeons need to wash their hands so they don't pass disease on from patient to patient. But when you actually take that that line from the Psalms and look at all the passages around it, it's talking about washing your hands as part of
evolution-like, yes.
It's talking about a ceremony where you're actually sacrificing birds in a burnt offering, which clearly isn't part of the thing.
Yeah, thank you so much for calling, Cornell. We really appreciate your call. You have a good day, okay?
You too, all. Thank you.
Yeah.
Bye.
And on the subject of what people believe and why, I'm going to go ahead and go to an email that we received from a man named Mark. And it's a very simple email. It simply states, "Why did you become an atheist?" And this sort of takes us back to our first show that we did, basically explaining what atheism is and why certain people ascribe to that philosophy. I call it a philosophy. That would even be contested within the atheist community.
I'll contest it.
Definitely. But in terms of why did I become an atheist, I don't think personally in terms of becoming one, I think that I sort of always was one, in that I went through the same sort of experiences that a lot of people do when they're in their teenage years or younger years, where I was a dabbler in spirituality, but nothing ever took because fundamentally my thought process doesn't lean that way. What about you guys, Scott?
I don't think I ever really could say that there was a day I became an atheist. I think it's more of I woke up and realized I'm not a theist. I know that I went through, gosh, I'd say 20, 30 years of just sort of being somewhere in the middle, being sort of an agnostic, not really knowing. In fact, I wouldn't know that I would give myself a title or a designation, but I prefer to call myself a skeptic because if nothing else, when you tell people you're a skeptic, the first thing is, well, either they know what you mean or if they don't, this is an opportunity for you to tell people this is what a skeptic believes or this is what we don't believe. I've always found it a bit interesting that by default over the ages, we've always, people have defined themselves by what they believe in. Now, as a skeptic, as an atheist, as an agnostic, you describe yourself in terms of what you don't believe in. But that brings up a whole new pot of worms, because people assume that you have a different belief system, that by default, an atheist has to have an atheistic religion, which just doesn't make any sense.
Well, yeah, and I think that you touch on a very important an important point that needs to be made. In terms of atheism, atheism is the biggest distinction that you can possibly make when it comes to religion. You are either a theist or you are an atheist. Now, once you've, you know, positioned yourself in whichever camp, that whether you believe in God or whether you don't believe in God, from there are several different things that you could additionally be. And so why did you become an atheist? The simplest answer to that is because I don't believe in God. There's not enough evidence for me to make a positive claim that God exists. That's why I am an atheist, and why I've always remained one, regardless of my interests in other religions. It would be the exact same, I think, if you ask someone, well, why did you become a theist? And that's not a question that religious people get that often. So I think that it's interesting just to sort of look at that question in terms of how it's even presented. And it sort of illuminates, I think, a lot of misconceptions about atheism.
I think for me, it comes back to that evidence, that there simply just isn't very much evidence, that there really isn't any evidence for the existence of any god, let alone a Christian god, a Norse god, a Greek god, a Muslim god. And that's the important part to me. And I wouldn't say necessarily that I became an atheist, but that I gradually accepted that I was an atheist, that I was someone who was never really convinced by the claims made by religious people, that I never really understood that people actually believed this stuff, that I was somebody who made it into junior high or high school without really meeting a genuinely religious person, that I was raised against a Catholic backdrop, that I thought this was just stuff that people did. This is just going through the motions. This is ceremony. But when I got to junior high or high school, I realized that there are people who actually believe this stuff, and it was actually remarkably jarring. And when I realized that, I started thinking about what I did believe. And whatever that was, it didn't involve an invisible magic man in the sky.
Yeah, definitely. And if you have any sort of opinion on what we're talking about, if you want to add in your two cents, if you disagree with us, we invite you to please give us a call here at Clay. The number here is 253-584-1480. Or if you don't want to go on the radio, you can definitely go to our website at askanatheist.tv and hit the big red button to ask us a question. Our next email, we're going to go ahead and go to Scott. He has an interesting email from Joseph from Baton Rouge about being an atheist in the workplace.
Interesting indeed. He says, hey, folks, really appreciate the show. Could you talk a little bit about to what extent I should advertise my atheism at work? In my line of work, insurance sales, most of my job is made up of meeting potential clients, getting to know them, and getting them to refer me to other potential clients. Where I live, Baton Rouge, is one of the first questions potential clients will ask me is what church I go to, and I know from experience that telling them that I'm an atheist can result in negative actions, which in turn negatively impact my earning potential. How would you guys handle such a situation? Well, Joseph, that is a fantastic question. We were thinking about that before the show, and it occurred to me that you're in kind of a unique situation in that, well, to begin with, Baton Rouge is pretty different from the Pacific Northwest up here in Seattle, where, I mean, you're at risk at any time you talk about the three taboos, sex, politics, and religion. Your job is exceptionally hazardous in that respect, because you have to expose a certain part of your life that has a risk potential, a downside potential, so you have to learn how to read your clients, and you do have a risk to take.
Yeah, I noticed that this might be a regional cultural thing as well, that asking somebody in the Bible Belt what church they go to is probably a lot like what little league team is your kid a part of, or where do your kids go to school, what's your favorite sports team? And that's a really hard part, because the question is, what do you say when someone asks you that? I don't know. I work in retail, so I don't have the sort of job where I have to build a personal relationship with somebody that I'm going to sell something to. It just doesn't work that way. I know that whenever I'm asked this sort of question by a stranger, and I know that I have the potential of losing a sale or losing a job or not getting something that I thought that I could get as part of an interview process, I usually just simply say that I'm not religious. I found then this is one of the main reasons we have this show, is getting rid of the stigma of this word atheist. And I find that often when I throw the word atheist out there, it a lot of people tend to read that like with a dog whistle almost, that it they seem to interpret that as, I want to have an argument with you, which was when you're trying to sell something, you're trying to get a job, that is the last sort of thing you want to sort of put off. And I think that over time this will change. But I would say the best thing I would do, Joseph, is just try to evade the question.
Yeah, that's exactly what I would do. If I was in some sort of professional setting and I knew that my livelihood depended on being able to maintain and build a rapport with these people, if someone asked me what church I went to and I knew that it was socially expected of me to actually go to a church, I would probably do a very underhanded thing and say, oh, well, I go to the Church of Parenthood. Man, my kids have been a pain. And try to redirect the conversation, because sometimes that's really all that you can do. And most people are asking the question because they're trying to be polite. But we will have to get back to that in just a minute. We're going to go ahead and take a little bit of a break. When we come back, we'll try to hit on our topic, which this week is going to be atheism is not a religion. See you in a bit. Thanks. And welcome back to Ask an Atheist. You are sitting here with Beth Lehman, Scott Leopold, and Mike Gillis. We have another email from a listener named Eric. Mike, can you go ahead and...
Yeah, they titled this, Atheism is a Religion. And he says, when asked, what religion are you? If you answer atheist, then it is your religion. The difference between the religions of atheist and Christian is that an atheist reaches for the tools of skepticism and science to answer questions instead of a tome of scripture. Other godless religions include Jains, Taoists, and other forms of Buddhist, and of course some forms of Unitarian Universalist. Religion does not require gods or faith. Religion is a set of beliefs concerning nature, cause, and the purpose of life in the universe. The practitioner derives morality, ethics, or preferred lifestyle from their ideas about the cosmos and human nature, all of which apply to atheism. I'm sorry, Eric, but I'm going to have to say you're dead wrong.
Yeah, and, I certainly don't agree with that either.
The first thing I would say is that when somebody asks me that question, I don't answer by saying atheism. I don't say my religion is atheism, because atheism is not a religion. If asked, like I said before, I simply say I don't have a religion, or that I'm not religious. I classify myself as an atheist because it's generally a word that people understand, and people understand what the word means, and because it fits best for what I'm trying to explain. It's sort of like when we get this charge a lot, and a lot of it is because at SCAN we won an award for best religious programming. This is when we were on public access television in Seattle. And even here on KLAY, we're classified as a religious program. It's not a perfect fit, but we primarily talk about religion and religious belief, so it's the best fit.
Yeah, I often talk about classification and the human desire to put things into groups. And atheism is one of those things. The problem with that desire that humans seem to have is that in nature, most things exist on a gradient. And so an easy and non-questionable classification isn't really that possible. And so when you try to classify atheism as something, like I said at the beginning of the show, I tend to refer to it as a philosophy. People don't agree with me on that.
I don't.
Other people will try to say that it's a religion. I certainly don't agree with that either. So I think when atheism gets lumped into religion, that doesn't mean that atheism is religion. It simply states that atheism deals with religion. And just because it deals with it doesn't mean that it could be classified as the same thing as religion.
I think at simplest, an atheist is someone who doesn't believe in the existence of gods. They do not have that belief. The very word itself just means not a theist, you know, period. If you only knew that somebody was an atheist, what else could you assume about them? I mean, really, nothing. Nothing could be said about somebody's hypothetical belief system aside from eliminating worldviews that necessitate a theistic belief. Like, you can't guess how an atheist would feel about politics, philosophy, or morality. And if you look at a lot of the major world religions, like, take any self-described Christian out there, and you think it's pretty safe to assume that this is a person who believes in they're a theist, and that they believe in the redemptive or power of Jesus as a Lord or Messiah. That take any random self-described Muslim, and you can assume that this is a person who believes that only Allah is God and Muhammad is his prophet. Even with a vast diversity of belief and the priority that people see in these religions, there really are a number of beliefs, tendencies, and traditions that you can simply assume that most people in that religion would have. And atheism doesn't have any of that. You'll get more necessary consensus between even warring factions of the same religion that you will between two atheists, even atheists that are part of the same community group. And with atheists, you can't really guess at any of other beliefs or their sources. This is another place where Eric is wrong, is that he says that atheists use science and skepticism. Not all of us. He listed a lot of godless religions, which I think ironically undermines his point. Because a lot of those religions aren't godless because they use reason or science or skepticism. In fact, most of them are full of the same sorts of supernatural claims as the theistic religions are. Likewise, I've met atheists who believe in all manner of supernatural things like ghosts or reincarnation. And now on our show, I know that we're skeptics. We're somebody who, when we hear a claim of any kind, especially a large supernatural claim, we demand a level of evidence that matches the size of the claim. And that isn't the only way that atheists can be. Atheism is only about a position on a single issue, the existence or non-existence of gods. That doesn't say anything else. You can have just as many non-evidence-based beliefs as any theist would have. Like, I've met atheists who believe in all sorts of conspiracy theories, 9/11 truthers, or bunk science like the anti-vaccine movement. I mean, really, there is nothing saying that an atheist has to be a skeptic or a critical thinker.
No, definitely not. And I think that one of the things that, if you're an outsider looking in on the atheist community, you might think that there is a strong consensus in terms of morality or even positions on things like, you know, the anti-vax movement is a great example. But what that is that whereas not all atheists must be skeptics, I would say that if you're a skeptic, you're pretty solidly an atheist or at least an agnostic. And so because the atheist community is comprised of a great deal of skeptics, when someone who is also an atheist comes out and says, oh, no, I don't think that you should vaccinate your children, you're going to get a lot of backlash from a large group of people who are going to point out that that is, you know, actually incorrect. And so it might seem that there is a consensus, but in reality, there really isn't.
That I think that this is the form that Western atheism has a tendency to take, is that it is based on science and reason, that it would come out of something like, say, the Enlightenment, Spinoza, and the modern sort of atheism that generally you see on your bookstore shelves is of that brand, the brand that we are, the one that says that somebody who makes a claim is a person with the burden to back up that claim with evidence. And if somebody's making a claim for the existence of a god, they're going to have to match the size of that claim with a you know, comparable amount of evidence. And if they're talking about a being that is ineffably large, is omnipotent, omniscient, and omnibenevolent, that is a huge claim.
Definitely.
That is something they're going to have to back up with a lot of evidence, certainly more than you need require to prove the existence of Bigfoot.
And one thing that I have noticed with the claim that atheism is a religion, one of the most important things that I think that needs to be looked into is what constitutes a religion? What makes something a religion? And we have the dictionary definition of what a religion is, which, Scott, I think you have that handy.
I took some notes this morning. The dictionary does have some things to say, although some of them are a bit out of date, but a couple of them would be a firm belief in something for which there is no proof, that works, a commitment or devotion to the supernatural, that certainly fits the traditional definition, a set of institutionalized practices, that certainly makes a lot of sense, or a system of religious attitudes, beliefs, and practices. Unfortunately, it's a little self-circular there with self-reference, but my own definition of religion is that in which you believe without requiring supporting evidence and even despite evidence that scientifically or logically refutes such beliefs. In examples today would include things like intelligent design in general, irreducible complexity in particular, the young universe, you know, the idea that the universe or the world is 6,000 years old, the Great Flood, the notion that we're created in some sort of image, and the entire concept of original sin, without which, you know, religion would basically have nothing to start with, and the notion that there's an afterlife, without which religion would have no fear-mongering power. So basically, it's all about the supernatural, which is what we skeptics and atheists are not about.
I think that's the really important thing that Eric left out of his definition, because he was talking about what he called a set of beliefs concerning the cause, nature, and purpose of life in the universe. I think that's only half of the definition. And I think, Scott, you did fill in the second half. The definition he gave was of a philosophy or a worldview. I don't even think – like, this is one of the places, Beth, where I disagree with you.
Yeah, definitely.
Is that I don't even think that atheism qualifies as a philosophy, because it only comes down to that one issue. Just as people don't – they're not – the opposite of an atheist is not a Christian or a Muslim. The opposite of an atheist is a theist. And the same way that an atheist is a nondescriptive term, a term that you can't figure out anything from. You can't – even take a wild guess, really, at the other beliefs that somebody holds. The same could be said of a theist. When you say that somebody's a theist, you don't know which god or gods they believe in. You don't know if they believe in Thor or Zardoz or Zeus or Krom, right, or Allah or Vishnu or any number of gods that people have worshipped in different religions or fiction or whatever. You don't know what they're talking about, so you really can't derive anything from the belief that they believe in a god. You don't know if it's Aslan or Cthulhu. You don't know. So I think that atheism is like theism. It's just that position on that single issue. It's like saying, is this a religion that believes in an afterlife or not? And if you say yes or no, you can't really deduce anything else from it.
Well, and it all comes back to the old adage that, you know, atheism is a religion the same way that bald is a hair color.
Not collecting stamps is a hobby.
Exactly. There's a huge amount of those. If you're interested, you should check those out because they're pretty funny. My interest in this topic more specifically is why would people want to perpetuate the idea that atheism is a religion? What is the motivation behind making that claim?
I think this is a claim that's often made most often by moderates and liberal religious believers. This isn't something that I hear a lot of times from fundamentalists or from, you know, the snake handling fire and brimstone types. They're not the ones that say, oh, you're a religion too. What I find this from are people who are trying to achieve a certain amount of liberal ecumenicalism, that if two people have opposing religious beliefs, but they both have opposing religious beliefs, it's easy for them to come to some sort of an impasse. Like, oh, you believe in a flying horse? Well, I believe in a talking snake. That's both silly, but, you know, there's sort of this, like, mutually assured destruction when it comes to the craziness. Where an atheist stands on the outside of that, they don't say, oh, well, I believe this silly thing too, so I guess it's okay for you to believe that silly thing. What we do instead is say, no, you believe in this silly thing. What reason do you have to believe that? And they're uncomfortable with that because they're not used to passing that point. They use a lot of those wise men touching the elephant, and they all think they're touching something else, and say, oh, well, we're all touching some part of the truth. And they use that a lot, and it's a very diplomatic thing to say, but the bottom line is that the thing I love about that, and actually simultaneously hate about that analogy, is because those blind men are all wrong. And they're also so incurious that they don't investigate farther than their own little corner of it. And if they investigated a little bit further, they'd find that it was an elephant. Like a guy who thought that the trunk was a snake, oh, I think I feel a snake. Snakes don't have hair. I mean, have some skepticism about what you don't. Don't just, with an incomplete picture, don't make assumptions. And I think that's the very cornerstone of what religion does when it faces questions that sometimes to which we don't have an answer yet.
Well, and I think that it's important, too. In atheism, one of the most important things that I've always heard is being able to be comfortable with the answer, I don't know.
Yes.
And it seems to me as though religious people aren't very comfortable with that answer. And so even when you have two people who believe totally different things, if you have a Christian or a Muslim or whatever groups that you want to throw out there, the fact that you can look at what they believe and not think that they're right about a single thing, but at least they're saying something. And somehow that's acquired value to people to say, well, you don't have an answer, therefore you're obviously wrong. Well, what if the answer is I don't know?
That's funny, because I think that comes to the core of it, is there's a real uncomfortability with that phrase. And a lot of times when you talk to a religious person, more often than not, I don't know, they treat it like some kind of gotcha, as if there's this invisible dichotomy, and that if they can get you to say I don't know, that it magically makes them right. But here's the thing. They don't know either. They're simply asserting based on faith. And let's be honest about what faith is. Faith is pretending to know what you don't know. Sometimes even when you, other people have evidence that what you know is wrong.
Definitely.
That reminds me of a quote that I came across this morning. And I'm trying to remember who said it, but it's what a tragedy that parents don't teach their children to doubt. It leads to this whole situation of you have to be confident in what you believe as if it were knowledge, not able to question it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that this is, again, one of the points we make about atheism not being a religion. What are the things that religions have that atheism doesn't? For instance, one, faith. And I noticed that Eric brought up the definition that a religion doesn't need faith. I disagree. I haven't seen a single religion in the world that doesn't involve faith in some way. Even just the fact that it makes an assertion that's not based on evidence, whether it's the Buddhist claim that all suffering comes from desire. That is an assertion. They don't back that up. The entire philosophy comes from that point. And I don't see them ever stopping to prove that point, or somebody thinking that Jesus died for me, and that the only way to get to heaven is to accept Jesus, or the only way to achieve paradise rather than hell is to become a Muslim. These claims are not backed up by evidence, and usually it's something very circular. And that point there where you don't have reasons, that is faith. Faith is getting past the point of I don't know and pretending like you do.
Exactly. And I think that it comes back to the idea that life exists on a gradient. And so when you're talking about what belief systems could be considered religions, just because a Buddhist might not specifically pray to a god, that doesn't mean that their belief in karma or reincarnation
or the cycle of samsara and attempting to reach nirvana.
Exactly. It doesn't mean that those sort of things are equally as evidentiarily valid as the position of there isn't enough evidence to believe in this.
And that really comes down to the point that a lot of people mix when they accuse atheists of having just as much faith or more faith as they do, is that it doesn't take faith to disbelieve an unbelievable claim. Like, for instance, if I was to say that I could fly like Superman, that I could levitate out of my chair, fly out the window, and fly out across the Pacific Ocean like Superman, just fly around the Earth really fast, nobody in this room is under any pressure whatsoever to believe that claim. They're going to want to see me fly. The same way that if I tell somebody I can sell them a car that can drive on water, they're going to go, okay, you're going to need to show me that.
Yeah, definitely. And I also think we should try to touch on the political motivations of asserting that atheism is a religion, because there's also a different tactic that's being used by different groups. One of which is, if we can prove that atheism or even secularism is somehow a religion, then we can break down the church-state separation and try to pass more theological or religion-based laws. And I think that is the instance where I go from being, oh, you probably don't understand this, or you haven't really thought through it, to being actually very angry when people assert that atheism is a religion.
Yeah, I think it comes back to faith-based claims, supernatural claims, the fact that we don't have ritual observances or devotionals, we don't have a moral code based on things from Scripture, we don't have holidays or dietary or sexual restrictions, tenets, dogmas. I don't see any of that. I don't know a single ceremony that has anything that comes from not believing in a god.
Definitely. And if you have any, if you wish to respond, please give us a call. The phone number here is 253-584-1480, and we'll be right back after this break. Hello, and welcome back. You're listening to Ask an Atheist, a weekly educational call-in program about atheism, skeptical inquiry, and separation of church and state. We were just talking about the fact that atheism is not a religion, and when you address this topic, one of the things that I at least have been accused of is criticizing religion too harshly. And we actually have an email from a man named Henrik that sort of addresses this topic.
Yeah, he says, hi, guys. I am an atheist, and nothing in this world can change my mind. A little aside here where, no, Henrik, that's not the attitude to take. The attitude is evidence should always be able to change your mind. Don't adopt anything dogmatically or say that nothing can change your mind. That's for people like Ray Comfort.
Yeah, no one wants to be a fundamentalist.
Don't be a banana man. And he says, don't you agree that it is better to leave people alone with whatever they believe and think is working? Regards, Henrik. I would say no, Henrik. I think it's important to challenge bad ideas whenever you hear them, because beliefs, at the basis of those ideas, they direct our actions, and our actions affect other people. A false belief, even the one with the best intentions, can hurt other people. And some of these people are even legislators. And Scott here is about to give you an example of somebody whose belief really should be challenged.
This is a good one. The title of this article is GOP maker Mike Beard claims God will provide unlimited natural resources. This is from the Huffington Post, dated February 16th. Mike Beard, a Republican state representative from Minnesota, recently argued that coal mining should resume in the land of 10,000 lakes, in partly because he believes God created an earth that will provide unlimited natural resources. God is not capricious. He's given us a creation that's dynamically stable, Beard told MinPost. We're not going to run out of anything. Beard is currently in the midst of drafting legislation that would overturn Minnesota's moratorium on coal-fired power plants, an effort that he backs due to his religious belief that God will provide limitless resources while ensuring that humans don't destroy the planet trying to get to them.
Yeah, I find this sort of thing really silly, and this reminds me a lot of a congressman who had a committee meeting hearing, I don't know, maybe it was a year ago, where he said that he didn't accept the science behind climate change because God promised in the book of Genesis that he would never drown the world again. See, this is dangerous. Like I said, that people have beliefs, and if they're false and they act upon them, can do harm. And some of these people write legislations that affect a lot of people.
Yeah, definitely. When we have politicians who are trying to enact laws based on religious belief, it never ends up sounding very good to me, at least. I'm sure there are some people who think it's great. One of the things that jumped out at me at Mike Beard's statements about God replenishing or taking care of humans regardless of what we do to the earth is he used Hiroshima and Nagasaki as an example. He said, how did Hiroshima and Nagasaki work out? We destroyed that, but here we are 60 years later, and they are tremendously effective and livable cities. Yes, it was pretty horrible, but can we recover?
Pretty horrible.
Oh, my God.
Exactly. Who says that? That is the worst explanation.
The nuclear devastation of your in two cities, that's pretty horrible. Yeah, don't get me wrong. I'm not going to say Nagasaki and Hiroshima were a good thing.
Bad as World War II was, we seemed to have done okay, so it wasn't that bad after all, was it?
Yeah, exactly. Pretty horrible is a term that I would describe having to go to the dentist, not dropping an atomic bomb on an entire city full of people. And the fact that this person is so willing to minimalize those sort of events in order to try to perpetuate his opinion, it's almost sickening. I mean, how can you possibly do that and be a legislator who's making laws? I don't know.
I mean, clearly we don't have limitless resources in this world. And if we continue to act as if we do, there's going to be a fallout from that. We're not going to be able to – I mean, clearly at some point in the future, we're going to have to move off of fossil fuels. It looks like we're going to have to make that change, or the stuff that we use is going to become more expensive. And the fact that you sort of ignore the fact that the house is on fire sometimes is only going to make the problem worse down the road. If you say there absolutely is no problem – well, technically he's right. There always will be some oil, provided we're willing to wait another few million years.
Yeah, definitely. And for the house burning down analogy, that's exactly right. You could say – well, my house did burn down, but look, I got another house, so obviously God provides. I don't see how it's logical to say there are already houses everywhere. So you can't say my house burned down, but I got a new house, God provides. We haven't gotten to a point where resources have actually run out yet. We're trying to get to a point where we can maintain our lifestyles and not, you know, take it and not use up these natural resources to the point of being in a really rough position. And so by him saying, oh, look at Nagasaki and Hiroshima, that's a terrible that's a terrible example anyway to try to prove his point.
I think it's important that we have to be, I mean, we're going to disagree on how to handle these sorts of crises. That there's going to be a difference of opinion, but I think that that difference of opinion has to be built on the mutual foundation of facts. And that's my big problem here, is that clearly this is somebody who doesn't care about any amount of scientific evidence to the contrary to his religious beliefs that comes across his desk. Like a number of congressmen who've said the same thing with climate change, and they cite the Bible, you're not going to – that's the danger here, is that, like I said, if you hold a false belief and act out on it, the potential for you causing harm is substantial. I mean, you could look at sort of the anti-vax movement, that mm-hmm. there are a number of people that are making a lot of conspiracy theory claims that the vaccination of your children is giving them autism or cancer or any number of other diseases. But the problem is that because of this movement, and this is something I know Bill Gates recently decried, there has been a resurgence of a lot of diseases, childhood diseases like mumps and whooping cough, stuff that we have conquered yep. decades ago, stuff that people forget used to be fatal, and there are children dying of these things. And it's and again, anti-vaccine activists, people like, you know, Andrew Wakefield yeah. and Jenny McCarthy, these are not people that are twisting their mustaches and trying to cause people harm or even trying to build their own power base. These are people who are acting – I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt – acting in the best interest, what they think is helping people. But the science and the evidence says otherwise. There is a danger to not building the basis of your beliefs off of evidence. Period.
Yeah. I want to make a point, too. We take a lot of crap excuse me, from people who say that we lack a moral compass, or if you don't believe in God, you don't believe in anything. Well, one of the things that we do believe in, and among the fact that, you know, we don't believe in – we're non-theists, we do tend to have a pretty good grasp on the sanctity of rule. We do believe in the Constitution, and we do believe that we have to be good stewards of this earth, because – we don't accept the idea that some supernatural whatever, Big Daddy, is going to step in and intervene or just provide unlimited amounts of excuses for us to keep doing what we've been doing, which is what's gotten us where we are. We don't think anyone's going to – that there's, you know, manna from heaven.
Yeah, we can't pretend that there's this magical deus ex machina that's going to come down and wave a magic wand and fix all of our problems. We have to assume that problems are real, and let's just assume that these things are all false. Let's just assume that – the earth has an unlimited amount of resources in it. There's no harm in us, in, you know, acting as if there aren't anyway, simply because – I'm not to make a Pascal's wager.
Yeah.
But I would say that the worst possible thing to come out of that is that we make a cleaner, more sustainable, higher quality of life world.
Definitely. And as someone who has a child, I have a 7-year-old son – when people in positions of influence make comments like this, I find it beyond – I can't even understand it. This is the world that my son is literally going to inherit. And here is a guy who has the ability to write yeah. legislature saying that we can go ahead and treat the planet like our toilet because God is going to make it better.
Scorched earth.
Yeah, definitely. There's no proof of that, and it worries me. But – we're going to go ahead and shift gears. We have Mark on line 2 from Portland, Oregon, talking about the whether or not the Bible's literal. Hey, Mark, are you there?
Hey, yeah, fine. You know about James Watts, remember, Secretary of Interior for Reagan, and he said in the year 2020, God is going to come back, so what if we despoil the interior of the country?
That sounds a lot like somebody who says, well, you know, there's a cleaning staff at this hotel, so we might as yeah. well trash the hotel room.
Right, even if there's no staff and the hotel you rely on for your life. You know, I wanted to ask you guys about the Bible. People oftentimes invoke the Bible and they say, gee, it's in the Bible, and, you know. And so I get tired of that. And what are your thoughts about telling these folks, hey, I got to tell you, you shouldn't take the Bible literally. I mean, it's self-contradictory in many places and so on. What are your thoughts about people just invoke the literal interpretation, the truth of the Bible at the drop of a hat?
Whistling in the dark.
Yeah, but, boy, it's effective for so many people. I mean, they don't agree among themselves exactly on what it is, but it's a conversation stopper for so many people.
They don't have to agree on all the details. The main thing is that they agree on the main talking points. It really yeah. is whistling in the dark.
Yeah, I don't think that you're going to give any argument that's going to change a biblical literalist's mind, because clearly if they're buying the stuff that's written of in the Bible literally, then argument and evidence and reason isn't something that's going to move them in the
yeah.
first place
yeah,
anyways.
But, literalism is actually pretty new as a dogma. It started in the last 100 years or 80 years or something.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, but the more that we can, I think, make a chink in the armor and say, you know, I got to tell you, there's so many contradictions, and more people hear that and say it's not supported by evidence, I think the better off the secular world and the world will be.
Oh, I agree. I think it's important for us to – I wouldn't say that – literalism is something brand new. I think that religion, like a lot of other things, goes through waves, and I think we're just going through a wave right now of literalism.
I think it's like the 1880s or something, the current one. So
yeah, it goes through waves, and you have things like, you know, the Inquisition and a lot of other events where I think what you have is that there's a constantly evolving moral dichotomy. Zeitgeist, not to use the word of that awful movie, but that's the word, is that we have this constantly evolving moral structure, and it happens through a long series of conversations. And what you see happen is that a lot of these biblical literalists will say that, oh, all of these things out of our morality come from the Bible and come from religion. I would say that the morality of religion comes from society. That often what you see happen in these sort of moments where there's this wave of religious literalism is that it's a reaction to a change in the sort of the structure of our morality, our national conversation.
Right now it's being financed by the big bankrollers, Koch brothers, you know, industries that don't want us to focus on problems that are real problems, as your host had previously said. I don't want to take all your time other than to say you have a wonderful show and I love your podcast. I download them. I love the proposal last week.
Thank you, Mark. That's very nice to hear.
Thanks, Mike.
Really
thanks, Mike.
It. You have a good day, okay?
You too. Take care now.
Yeah. I wouldn't necessarily equate the religious right with big business. I think in some ways that – I think there's going to be a coming battle between those two in the political sphere, that for the longest time they've acted as if these things are sort of synonymous. I just think that until recently they're not really stepping on each other's toes. If you look at the religious right, what are the only things that they care about? Generally, abortion, they care about gay rights, and they care about getting their crap into schools.
Well, and that's actually a topic that I wanted to touch on, is that the current state of fundamentalist religion that you see, the, I guess I want to say politically active fundamentalists, really gained traction once Roe versus Wade was passed in the Supreme Court. That was the catalyst that made these people start to group together and fight for a common cause and sort of get over their differences. Because they find that one single topic is so important that it's worth binding together and creating a sort of force politically and socially and that sort of thing. So if you're talking about why fundamentalism is so popular today and why it remains to be popular, even though we have a myriad of scientific information that's coming in every day, it seems like. I would point to that historically as the real reason why we're looking at a very fundamental swing in the general population of America.
Yeah, I think what's going to happen, I think there is going to be a battle sometime in the future between business and religion, and I think it comes because business really is profit-based. And I have my own disagreements with it, but it moves with the culture. And for instance, if you look at any gay rights rally these days, you're going to see a lot of big corporate sponsors. And it's because they realize this is a community that has money. This is a community that will organize and boycott you. And there is no profit in being a bigot. And that's going to be a coming thing, is that we're going to see a battle between those two forces. And frankly, society always wins. And what ends up happening when you have these sort of moral changes, let's just say gay rights is the current one, is that there's always going to be an element of society that wants to continue living in the society from like 50 years previous, and they will be dragged kicking and screaming, and eventually religion will have to change its mind on gay rights the way it changed its mind on slavery, because if they don't, their religion will die.
Definitely.
I want to add one thing. We were talking about, since we're on the subject of what we do believe and don't believe, and Mike, you can take this to heart. You know, a couple thousand years ago, people might say, well, Abraham was going to slay his son and, you know, praise God. But today, if you saw anything like that happen, would you go up on the rooftop and pray with that man, or would you dial 911? I have no doubts that you'd dial 911. And with that, I want to just add that if there's one thing that we atheists and skeptics hold sacrosanct, is the power of the individual mind. To quote Inherit the Wind, the power of a child to master the multiplication table. I think that's reason enough to remain a skeptic for me.
Definitely. And why don't we go ahead and we're going to take a call really quick. I believe that this is our Sam on line one, but let's just make sure. Sam from South Dakota. Yes, hey, are you there?
Yeah, he's Sam.
Yeah, I sort of live here now.
Oh.
In the snow, have you built an igloo?
No, one sort of formed around our car.
Oh, my goodness.
I want to say again, Sam, congratulations on
yes,
your engagement.
Yes, congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It's been, I kind of timed it so that we go meet my family immediately afterward. And so we decided to drive there this time. And then suddenly there's a blizzard, and we were in the middle of...
How's your better half doing?
I was in the middle of nowhere, South Dakota, and we said, well, we can't drive in this, so we pull off. Count of 500 people, sort of found a hunting lodge just by accident. And then we get some rest, we get up, we checked it, and 90's closed. So we live here now.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, I guess it's a good thing that this is right after the proposal. You guys are in a really good mood that's going to sort of carry you through this.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I wouldn't mind being stuck in a cabin right after I got proposed to. That'd be amazing.
It's easier to deal with a road trip, I'm sure.
Yeah, accidental pre-honeymoon, I suppose. I don't know. Anyway, you guys are running up, I guess, the hour, so I won't take any more of your time.
All right,
thank
Sam,
you, Sam.
Thank you so much for calling in. You have a good time, okay?
Swerve
get
safely.
Back to us safe.
I will.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
All right.
And yeah, we're getting to the end of our show. One thing that I do want to remind you is that after every show, we try to have some sort of meetup. This week, we're going to be meeting at the Red Hot. That's at 2914 6th Avenue in Tacoma. Tasty hot dogs and delicious beers on tap. So if you can meet us there around 5 p.m., that would be great. That's about all the time that we have this week. Ask an Atheist is a production of NEDM Media. Our call screener today was Jerry Schiffelbein. Our co-hosts were Scott Leopold and Mike Gillis. And I'm Beth Lehman. Catch us online at askanatheist.tv, guys.
All right.
Right on.
See you guys next week.
Thank you very much for listening. You guys have a good day.
Stay faithless.
Keeping you informed, this is KLAY, Lakewood, Tacoma, your conversation station.